My name is Sue Bolin, and I am on the board of Living Hope, and I also serve as a small group leader in our online forums. I have the privilege of ministering to married women who struggle with same-sex attraction. I'm also with Probe Ministries, which is a Christian worldview and apologetics ministry. And I also get to work with MOPS, Mothers of Preschoolers, which is how I ended up doing this topic, because I am a mentor mom for Mothers of Preschoolers. My qualification for that is that I raised two sons to adulthood without killing either one of them. And because I've been involved with Living Hope for a number of years, and I have the privilege of being involved in ministry to those who struggle with this issue, several years ago at a Love One Out conference at First Baptist Church of Dallas, I was hearing about the factors that went into male homosexuality, something similar to what we just heard from Ricky, with Dr. Joseph Nicolosi, who has written a book, A Parent's Guide to Preventing Homosexuality. And I really sensed the Lord saying, I want you to go tell young moms this information. It's like, you open the door and I will go, and the phone hasn't stopped ringing. So I love being able to present this information, because there's no reason that people have to end up with gender insecurity and gender confusion if we know what goes into raising gender healthy kids. First of all, though, I want to give you a commercial for the Probe Ministries website, because in addition to being involved in this ministry, the Living Hope, I'm also a geek, and I administrate the Probe website, www.probe.org, and there is a great deal of information in our faith and sexuality section on homosexuality, and lots of answers to real live emails from real live people. We cover a huge range of topics, a Christian view of science, everything from stem cells and bioethics to creation evolution. We do public policy, we do history, we've got theology and apologetics, and I just want to invite you to come visit our website. In order to raise gender-healthy kids, we need to cherish our kids' gender. The goal is for them to be as excited about being a boy or a girl as God is, because the Lord was delighted to make our children boys or girls. And there are some keys to making that happen. First of all, knowing that when we support our kids' gender, it results in a healthy self-concept. We want them to feel good about who God made them to be. And it's an important part of preventing homosexuality, which is really better called gender identity confusion. If we've got boys who like being boys and girls who like being girls, they're probably not going to struggle with same-sex attraction, because they're just content being who they are. And it's easier to raise a healthy child than to repair an adult. So if we could build in gender healthiness in small children, then they probably won't struggle with this issue when they're older. First of all, let's talk about what some of those gender differences are. I want to just briefly touch on some of the differences between boys and girls, understanding that when God made us male and female, He did not make generic human beings who just happened to some be boys and some be girls. God makes boys and girls very differently. They are designed by God to be different. After about 40 years of feminist rhetoric saying that there are no real differences between men and women, John Gray made $1 billion with his book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, rediscovering the truth that men and women are different. Why? Because it's consistent with the way God made us. We are different. Boys and girls are different. I'm going to just cover some of the differences between boys and girls. Boys get their sense of self from achievement. They're wired to be self-reliant. They would much rather accomplish things on their own. One of my sons, one of his first full sentences was, I do it myself. You know, and this is to this day. You know, my husband will go into a grocery store with a list of things to do, and it's like you get more brownie points if you find all that stuff without asking anybody where it is, because that boys are wired to be self-reliant. This is not a design flaw. When men were pushing west into the frontier, there was no 7-Eleven to say, excuse me, can you direct me to the Rocky Mountains? You know, they had to figure things out on their own. So this is part of God's design. Girls get their sense of self from relationships. We are so much more relational. And there's a reason for that, because little girls grow up to be moms, and moms need to connect from before birth with babies and just immerse them in a sea of bathing them with love and affirmation and relating in order for kids to be healthy. So women just connect with each other, with children, with men, with anybody who breathes. We are wired to be interdependent from birth. Little girls, you know, don't need to be taught how to connect with other little girls most of the time, which is why girls and ladies form small groups in bathrooms and parking lots. You know, we just connect with each other. So we're very different. Boys are linear in their thinking. They tend to focus on one thing at a time. There is a reason for this. God makes the male brain different from the female brain. At about 6 weeks in the gestational process, there is a hormone bath that hits the baby boy's brain, and it affects the corpus callosum, which is a bundle of fibers that connects the right and the left hemispheres, and it allows the right and the left hemispheres to talk to each other. At that point, some of the connections between the hemispheres are broken down, localizing activity in the male brain to one side or the other at any given moment. And so, as a matter of fact, girl brains at rest show the same amount of electrical activity as a boy's brain working full steam. You know, it's just that girls' brains are just working all the time, making connections that boys just don't get. So boys tend to be linear in their thinking because it's limited to one hemisphere at a time. So they'll be thinking A to B to C to D to E, whereas a girl's brain will start out at A and zoop to Z on the other hemisphere, and then back to F, and then P, and then she'll end up at E. And girls can't explain how they got from A to E so clearly and linearly, because everything is all connected in a way that a boy's brain isn't. Girls are multitaskers. We can handle more than one thing at a time. The reason for this is, if God had not created the female brain to be able to multitask, Adam and Eve would never have made a second generation of children. They just wouldn't have made it. Because moms need to be able to multitask. And so girls are able to handle several things at once. Boys don't do so well. And so one of the things that I learned was that with my sons, I needed to give them no more than three things at a time to try to keep in mind. Because if I added number four, number one just dropped off the radar screen. They just handle one thing at a time because their brains are different. Boys tend to be competitive, where girls are more cooperative. This is a function of the fact that boys, from birth, have a higher testosterone level. And there is a feeling of energy and a feeling of competitiveness from birth in a lot of boys. Now, when girls are born with a higher testosterone level than other girls, they tend to be more competitive and show some of those more masculine characteristics. But to see it, someone wisely said, to look at a boy is to see a contest. And so boys just want everything as a contest. I have a friend who had two sons who were very close in age, and she couldn't understand why the bathroom always smelled like pee, and she cleaned it every day, and she just could not understand it. And one day she happened to be walking down the hallway, and she looked, and the two sons were both standing next to each other, seeing how far they could get away from the toilet and still make it into the bowl. And of course, you learn that, okay, this is as far as I can go, when it no longer hits the toilet. And so it was contributing to the smell, because they were constantly competing with each other. I can be 3 feet away. I can be 3 feet and 2 inches away. Everything is a competition with boys. Girls tend to be more cooperative. And it has to do with the natural nurturing, empathetic aspect of a girl's heart. Now, it's not to say that there's no such thing as competitive girls, because of course there are, but girls tend to be more cooperative. My husband and I do Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, that this little section is based on. We team teach that lecture. And somebody told us one time that he saw this exact principal at work at the school where he worked. He said one day the boys were out on the playground playing basketball. One of the boys fell down, scraped up his knee, and you know what happened to the game. You know, the kid goes out, the substitute comes on, and you know, comes in, and the game goes on. The very next day, the girls were out there playing basketball. The exact same thing happened. One of the girls fell down, scraped up her knee, and what do you think happened to the game? It's totally over. Everybody gathered around. Are you okay? Are you going to be? Oh, I'm so sorry. Do you want me to go get a wet paper towel? Should I call your mom? I don't think it's going to leave a scar. You know, and the ball just goes rolling off by itself because suddenly the game stopped and they were all about cooperating and taking care of the wounded one. Boys are action-oriented because they are so, again, that the testosterone levels tend to make boys need to move, which is a recipe for fidgetiness when you combine that with a higher metabolism rate. Boys want to move. And as Ricky was talking about, when we've got the emotionally sensitive boys, the 2 to 3% of them, who aren't necessarily, you know, movers, except that they are the ones who change the world, they can sit quietly and be involved in the more ethereal pursuits, and they don't necessarily fall in this category. But for the majority of boys, they would rather throw themselves in a chair as to sit in it, and why walk in a straight line if you can zigzag down the hall? And boys just are that way. They're just, it's a bundle of energy wanting to get out, which is why school is so frustrating to boys, because it's geared for the way girls learn and the way girls are. Let's everybody be quiet and cooperative and sit at round tables and chat and work together. And heaven forbid we should have any sort of competition or contest, because that's evil. Where boys are action-oriented, girls are verbal. Girls generate 3 times as many words per day as boys. Now, this is not the same thing as generating as much noise per day. Because boys, especially young boys, will take anything and make it into the opportunity to add a sound effect. But, you know, the smallest things, you know, they know how to make noise with it. But when it comes to actually generating meaningful communication in words, girls will generate 3 times as many words per day as boys. There is a reason for this as well, because most little girls grow up to be mommies, who are responsible for children learning to talk. And children need to swim in a sea of words in order to learn to speak, which is why sitting them in front of the TV doesn't do it. They need to be engaged in a constant stream of communication from their mothers. So it makes total sense that girls would be more verbal. Boys are more action-oriented. When boys feel hostile, they get physical. When our son entered puberty and he and I were button heads, one day he pulled back his fist like he was going to slam me in the face. My husband took him aside and said, "You may not threaten my wife." That was the last time he ever did that, you know, and he just put the kibosh on that physical hostility. So he never did hit me, but he did kick a hole in the hallway wall and had to work with somebody to repair it. And he never did kick another hole in any walls. But boys release their hostility physically. Girls, being more verbal, tend to release their hostility verbally. Is anybody in here, like me, still carrying the scars of some junior high girl who just sliced and diced you with her tongue? You know, when girls get hostile, they can get mean and vicious. And you know that old thing, sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me? That is a lie from the pit of hell. So we need to take girls through the book of Proverbs and show them the power of the tongue. It can do great damage and as well as great good. Boys and girls show their hostility differently. And boys and girls nurture differently. This is an interesting and new concept to me. I'm writing a book on raising gender healthy kids. And in the research, I just came across this, that we tend to think of nurturing as just the empathic type that girls naturally have, you know, of being reaching out and comforting someone and being soft and compassionate and gentle with them. And that is very much nurturing. That's the majority of nurturing that we see from women and from moms. But boys show, and then they grow up to become men, who show a different kind, an aggressive kind of nurturance that is very much nurturing. Boys nurture each other by body slamming each other or walking up and slugging each other in the arm, or reaching over and hitting somebody in the head, or calling them, words of affection like, "Hey, butthead." That's all nurturing, believe it or not. And you have to be told that it's nurturing, because it's real easy for us as girls to go, "Stop calling names." Not all names are evil. But boys tend to be very aggressive in their nurturance, and it's a way of saying, "Come on in and be part of the group." It's also a way for a guy to help another guy get a tougher skin, which boys need. Men need tougher skin. And so where girls will say, "Are you okay? Are you okay?" Boys will tend to say, "You're okay, get up." We need both kinds. As someone once said, sometimes we need an arm around us and someone to be very compassionate and loving, and sometimes we need a kick in the rear. And they're both different kinds of nurturing. So there's two different kinds. One of the things that's real important to do in order to have gender-healthy kids is to follow God's rules for marriage and family, because family relationships determine how a child is going to see himself and how he's going to learn to relate to other people. I'm going to give you 5 rules. By the way, all these PowerPoint presentations will be on the Living Hope website after today, so you can download all of this later. The first rule is that both husband and wife have clearly defined roles. Husbands and wives are not interchangeable. Mothers and fathers are not interchangeable. I love Dr. Laura. She usually gets it right, but she's wrong on this one, because it matters whether you're a husband or a wife or a mother or a father, because we relate to people differently. Mothers and fathers have specific roles to play according to God's design. The father is to lead, protect, and provide. The mom is to respond, to nurture, and to support. We do those things differently. We need the father to display masculinity by being the initiator and by showing strength in protecting and providing. The Bible says that the glory of a young man is his strength. And that is the question tied to every boy's heart, and when he grows up, it's a man's heart, is, do I have what it takes? Am I strong? Which is, I loved it that that Ricky just mentioned how important it is for a father to communicate to his son, "You've got what it takes." That's what it means to know you're a man, is, "I've got what it takes to be a man." And a father is the one who communicates that. A mother cannot do that. We don't have the strength in who we are. God intends for us to hear the voice of the father and saying, "You have what it takes." Both boys and girls need to see femininity modeled to them in the mom, when she shows what a godly responding heart is, and that she shows beauty in nurturing and supporting. The glory of a woman is her beauty, just as the glory of a man is his strength. There are lots of kinds of strength, and there are lots of kinds of beauty. We do not all have to be, nor can we be, classically beautiful, beauty pageant type women. God doesn't make us that way. Our problem is we have a narrow view of what beauty is. When God says, "Excuse me, but my view of beauty is a lot broader than that." And so both boys and girls, if they're growing up seeing strength and beauty modeled to them from their parents, it'll help them understand who they are. The second rule is that the father should be an involved leader and be warm and affectionate toward his children, as opposed to being physically or emotionally distant from his kids. He needs to be in there, involved and leading. And that warm and affectionate part is hugely important, because in families where the dad is cold and aloof, his children are wounded. We need all children need a dad's attention, approval, and affection, those 3 A's. They need a dad to pay attention to them. How many times have you heard the phrase, "Daddy, watch this! Daddy, watch me!" One of my friends said he was with another dad, and his daughter, the daughters of both men were on the trampoline, and the little girl was saying, "Daddy, watch me." And he go, uh-huh. And he turned back to his conversation. And the other dad wisely said, "You'd better watch her now, because if you don't, she'll find somebody else to watch her later. And it won't be the kind of healthy attention that you will give to her." All children need a dad's approval or affirmation. "I'm so proud of you." We long to know our fathers are proud of us. And we need both physical and verbal affection. Kids need to hear, "I love you." They need to hear, "If you were the only kid, I mean, if I got to choose out of all the kids in the world, I would pick you to be in my family." That kind of affection is huge. By the way, our Heavenly Father showed all three of these when Jesus was baptized. He showed his attention. He was paying attention to Jesus by showing up at the baptism. Secondly, he showed his approval by saying, "This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased." And third, he showed his affection by calling him beloved. I have two sons. I absolutely love introducing them as, "This is Kurt. This is my beloved son in whom I am well pleased. This is Kevin. I want you to meet Kevin. This is my beloved son in whom I am well pleased." I have never once had either one of them say, "Oh, would you stop saying that? That's just so corny." Not once. When the dad is involved and is warm and affectionate toward his children, it prevents the emotional void of a sense of intimate connection with a man. Because all kids have a father-shaped hole in their heart, and they need dad to fill it. If dad isn't involved and warm and loving, a boy can grow up not comfortable with being male, because masculinity is, it's like there's an impression, it's imprinted on a boy's soul, and he needs to grow up knowing, I'm a guy, just like my dad is a guy. That's who I am. I'm a boy. And it's cool. Masculinity is an achievement. It's not this automatic thing that just happens, because boys grow up first attached to mom. But as Ricky was saying, they have to kind of disconnect from mom in order to attach to dad and go, "You know what? I don't belong with the women. I belong in the world of men." That's an achievement. It doesn't happen with everybody. So men need to help this happen, which is why men's ministries are so incredibly important, to help guys feel like you belong. You belong in the world of boys. You belong in the world of men. You belong in the world of masculinity. It's why men ministering to boys is so important in the church, why Boy Scouts is so hugely important, to be able to help them get over that hump and see themselves as, "I am masculine. I'm my kind of masculine." And also, girls who miss their father's affection can become promiscuous later. You probably all know or remember girls in high school who found their attention from guys in the back seats of cars. If they didn't get it from their daddy, they were going to get it someplace, because they're skin hungry and they're hungry for a man's attention and affection, even if it's fake and false. Third rule is that the mother should love and nurture her family without being controlling. It is really hard for us as women to not be controlling. It seems to be an across-the-board temptation to most of us. There are some women who are doormats, but the vast majority of us fight the temptation to be controlling. God said to Eve immediately after the fall, "The effect of the curse on you, Eve, is that I will greatly multiply your pain in childbirth," meaning not just getting pregnant and having babies, but all the ramifications of having children. You're going to have conflict in your relationships with your kids, and you're going to have conflict in your relationship with your husband, because your desire will be for him, meaning you're going to want to control him, but he will rule over you, and there's going to be a power clash in your relationships with your kids and your relationships with your husband. And we are dealing with that to this day. Girls need their mothers to show them that being a female is a good and lovely gift from God. And it's real hard to give away that which we don't have, which is why it's so important to pursue contentment for us as women, as mothers. And boys need their moms to love and respect them without being smothering or overprotecting. one of the basic needs, I would say the most important need of every boy who grows up to be every man, is to feel respected. And it's so important for boys to feel that their mother respects who they are as boys, as individuals, and not as an extension of herself. The other extreme from being controlling is being a doormat, where you are controlled by anybody who wants to steamroll over you. Neither of those is correct, and the more we focus on who God made us to be so that we know who we are in Christ, then we will stand up and not be a doormat, nor will we be controlling, because we'll be respectful of other people. The fourth rule is that the father loves the mother. You may have seen a bumper sticker a number of years ago that says, "The greatest gift a father can give his children is to love their mother." It was true then, it is just as true today. If a little girl grows up in a home where daddy loves mommy, a little girl can believe it's safe and good to be a woman, because her father is the number one most important man in her life, and the way he treats her mother is going to make a huge statement to her about the value of women. She also will grow up believing that men can be trusted, because look at the way daddy treats mom, with love and respect. And when the boy sees his father cherishing and protecting his mother, he sees a man going beyond himself. He sees the glory of masculine strength. The Lord calls husbands to lay their lives down in self-sacrifice the same way that Christ loved the church. And when a little boy watches his father continually deny himself and serve his mother, as the man serves his wife, he is going to see, wow, that's what a man looks like. It is such a joy for me to see what a great husband my older son has become. He's going to celebrate his first anniversary tomorrow, and because he had 24 years of watching my husband treat me like a queen and take care of me and honor me and respect me, cherishing me, protecting me. And he saw that every day of his life. And so he grew up so ready to be a husband who would lay down his life for this precious girl that he married. Number two son is looking for the girl that he can lay down his life for. When a boy sees his father cherishing and protecting his mother, he grows up believing that being a man is a good and wonderful gift from God. It's a great thing to be a man, because look at what dad is doing. It's so cool to see my dad being such an awesome man. What we've discovered in Living Hope and in all homosexual ministry is that a lot of guys who struggle with same-sex attractions don't believe that being a man is a good and wonderful gift from God. They don't know what it means to be a man. Not entirely sure they want to be a man. That's why it's so important to follow God's rules for marriage and family. Ephesians 6:33, very interesting, captures the primary need of men and the primary need of women. Primary need of men is to be respected. Primary need of women is to be loved or cherished. And isn't it amazing that God in one verse says it is important for husbands to love their wives and see to it that a wife respect her husband. God created women to be loved, created men to be respected, and it's in one verse. As a matter of fact, there's a great guy, Emerson Eggerich, who has a ministry called Love and Respect. You can go to loveandrespect.com and read great articles, and it just kind of, you know, if we're following what the scriptural guidelines are, kids are going to come out of it being healthy. The fifth rule for marriage and family is that the mother shows respect for the father. She shows that women can enjoy and celebrate men. And a woman is going to communicate respect, not just for her husband, but for all men in all kinds of ways. She's not going to roll her eyes and make disparaging remarks about those stupid men or that kind of thing. Because those kind of critical, judgmental attitudes are contagious. When a mom shows respect for the dad, it shapes a girl's view of men in general. A lot of the women that I minister to who struggle with same-sex attraction feel that men can't be trusted. They don't want to have anything to, just don't touch me, don't even look at me. I don't want to have anything to do with you because men are brutes. Now, the majority of girls who struggle with same-sex attraction had been sexually abused. And so their view of men is men cannot be trusted because men will abuse you, men will hurt you, men will violate you, and I wish God hadn't even made them. That's the baggage that they're carrying. When a mother shows respect for the father, it shapes a girl's view of men in general, and a girl is going to grow up feeling respectful of men. When a mom shows respect for the dad, her son learns that men deserve respect and that masculinity is a good thing. Because a boy is watching what his mother does, and if his mother respects her, his father, he's going to say, men deserve respect. Look what mom is doing. We also need, besides following these God's rules for marriage and family, we also need to affirm our children's gender. There are two books I really want to recommend to you, both by John Eldridge. The first one, Wild at Heart, is about the masculine heart. I don't agree with every single thing he says because he can be, it's a difference between being a masculine risk taker and being just stupid sometimes and doing dumb stuff, which sometimes he does. Nonetheless, it was one of my all-time favorite books. It's on my short list of my five favorite books of my whole life. The person that told me about it said, if you are married to a man or you're the mother of sons, you need to read this book so you'll understand what the masculine heart is all about. And I am so glad I read it. And it made me yearn for an understanding, for him to address the issue of what's the feminine heart all about, which he finally, within the last year, came out. John and his wife Stacy Eldridge wrote the book Captivating, which nails it as well. So those two are really good about understanding the masculine heart and the feminine heart. But in order to affirm our children's gender, we need to understand gender. And I would like to suggest to you that you will often hear that there is a gender spectrum with masculine on one side and feminine on the other. And, you know, men are supposed to get in touch with their feminine side. Now, you hear that, but you never hear women encouraged to get in touch with their masculine side, which I think is interesting. I disagree. I think there are two different types of spectrum. There's a masculinity spectrum and there's a femininity spectrum because Scripture says God made them male and female. It is not one spectrum with, you know, male and female on either end. And what about the poor people in the middle? I think, you know, God made men with a variety and he makes women with a variety. With the masculinity gender spectrum, on the one end, you've got what Ricky referred to as the all-American boy. You've got the macho guy who loves sports. Anything that remotely resembles a ball, he is so there. He's going to, you know, get into it. Often these are the guys who don't mind at all getting hot, sweaty, and dirty, and they're just, you know, they're just your typical, what comes to mind when you think masculine. This is what our culture says. This narrow range of behavior and characteristic, this is how we define masculinity. But on the other end of the spectrum is the emotionally sensitive guy who is creative, gifted, talented, often very attuned to art and music and drama and aesthetics, often doesn't like to get hot and sweaty and dirty. Often these guys don't have good eye-hand coordination for sports. And so they just know right off the bat, I am not going to be good at sports, so I am not going to go where I'm going to experience rejection and, you know, failure. And so these guys are really sensitive. They're born that way. You don't make them. Children come out of the womb with their personalities, their temperaments, and wherever God ordained for them to be on the gender spectrum, that's where they come out. Well, one of the things that we've discovered is that from an early age, the boys down on this end, the sensitive ones, we could go into any church nursery, 3 years old, 4 years old, and pick out the ones who are going to be at risk for gender identity stuff, gender identity problems, if they're not supported in their masculinity, because these are the boys that if somebody starts to cry, they'll drop whatever they're doing and they'll go over and be the empathetic nurturers. You okay? I'm sorry. It's going to be okay, you know, and they'll hug them and they'll pat them. And those are the boys and they can't stand it when somebody else is upset. How they have these incredibly sweet, tender hearts. In our culture, we say, this is masculine down here, and down here is unacceptable. this isn't a good guy. And it's an artificially narrow range of what is acceptable, because God says, but I like this kind of masculine. I make boys who grow up to be those kinds of tender-hearted, compassionate, creative, sensitive types. I made them that way. I loved what Ricky said about those are the world changers. I've also observed these are the boys that if they're supported in their masculinity, they grow up to be the best pastors, the best husbands, the best counselors. They're amazing artists and musicians. One of my sons is an artist and just graduated with an art degree. He has that sensitivity, and it's a beautiful thing to see. And our culture says, oh no, unless you're down here, you're not masculine. And God says, you know what, if we will just support these boys and help them realize that's the kind of boy God chose you to be, and you are a great boy at being who you are. If we support boys, no matter where they are on this gender spectrum, they will see themselves healthily. I love the idea that it's really only 2-3% of the population, which means there's only 2-3% of boys are down here on this end. We need to tell them, you know, you are, in terms of guys, you are the gifted and you're in the gifted and talented program, you know, because they really are specially gifted and above average IQ, and God has a special plan. Satan goes after them and derails these guys, because those are the ones that get called homo, fag, queer early on in elementary school. I don't know where the boys and the other kids pick up the phrases, but you know, the kids start getting labeled in elementary school, and they need to be encouraged to say, no, that's not me. It's like if somebody walks up and puts one of these sticky name tags on you, and if this name tag said Teresa, and I looked down and went, my name is Sue, I'm not Teresa, and I took off the name tag and said, I need another one. I need one that says who I am, because this isn't me. That's the way we need to help kids deal with labels. They're not true. You know, that's not who God made them to be. With the femininity gender spectrum, there's another one with girls who are the foo-foo feminine girls down here. And there's the girls who were born wearing, you know, loving pink, loving to get their hair doodled up. You know, I knew one little girl who had a velvet dress and white tights that she wanted to wear every Sunday through the whole year. I mean, it could be July in Dallas, and she's looking like it's Christmas, but she felt so pretty in that dress. But that's what I want to wear. And then you've got girls down here who are the jockettes, you know, who are often don't really care for all that foo-foo stuff, hate to have their hair done. Usually they don't like wearing dresses, have no patience for Barbies, you know, and they're often gifted athletes, naturally strong leaders, or they're just not interested in, you know, a typically girl stuff. But God makes girls on this end of the spectrum, because there's a strength to athleticism and strong leaders, and these girls, when supported in their femininity, can grow up to become the best mothers of boys, teachers of boys. They're able to connect with some kids in ways that others can't. I've had some interesting conversations with women who were raised, I mean, they were born as tomboys, extremely athletic, really had no patience for typically feminine stuff, and yet grew up feeling very comfortable with being a woman. And I asked them, what is it that, why do you not struggle when so many other tomboy types do? And all of them said, because my parents just celebrated me for who I am, and they supported me as the type of girl that I was, and then said, we understand that you don't want to wear dresses. It's okay. You don't have to wear dresses most of the time, but sometimes there's a time to wear a dress and be, you know, learn to like and be ladylike. You don't have to do that all the time. Grown-ups all have to wear stuff they don't want to wear all the time. You know, it's just part of life. We're going to teach you how to do the lady thing, and then you can be comfortable in your sweats or your jeans or your ball cap, whatever, the rest of the time, but you need both. And they just supported them right where they were. We need to affirm boys in their masculinity, no matter where they fall on the spectrum, and affirm girls in their femininity, no matter where they fall on the spectrum. We need to affirm their existence by telling them, I love you, and I'm so glad God put you in the family. I'm so glad you were born. I was sharing this with our MOPS group, my Mothers of Preschoolers group, at our church, and one of the girls, the following weekend, they went up to Lake Texoma with her family, and she took this to heart, and she goes outside on a walk with her four-year-old son. She said, "Parker, I am so glad God made you a boy. You know, you're not like me. You like frogs and toads and worms and stuff like that. Mommy just really does not like that stuff, but I'm glad God made you such a boy, just the kind of boy you are." He didn't say anything, and she thought, well, that was wasted time, you know, because she had not yet learned the lesson that it takes a while for words to percolate down from a male brain into the heart, you know, and they generally do land later. Sure enough, they get down to the lake, and they find the frogs and the toads and the worms and the fish and all that stuff, and he's just totally into it, and she's squeamish, and it's like, go to it, I'm so glad you're enjoying this. Well, they go back up to the lake house. He bursts in the door, finds his grandmother, and says, "Grandma, guess what? Mommy's glad that God made me a boy because I like frogs and toads and worms and stuff like that that she doesn't like." She thought, son of a gun, he was listening. But he was so delighted that his mom thought it was cool that he could like stuff that she didn't like, and it was fine to be different from her. This little boy is not struggling with his gender. We also need to affirm their appearance. Not that this is the only thing we ever want to deal with a kid. Somebody asked me the other day, do we really want to raise up JonBenet Ramsey's? You know, where the only thing that matters is your appearance? Like, no, this needs to be balanced. We also need to affirm all the other parts of what makes them, what makes a child who they are. But boys want to be strong. All boys want to be strong. It is that question attached to the male heart. So one of the things I suggest is that we ask boys to make, you know, show me your biceps, show me how strong you are. Well, they could be as big around as a pencil, but we, you know, you just, whoa, you're getting to be so big, you know, you're going to be so strong. Nobody has to grow up to be a bodybuilder. Nobody says you have to be Arnold, but every boy wants to know, I'm becoming a big, strong guy. Even if it's just in his own mind. And see, as guys get older, they generally don't have a problem with their bodies, you know, which is why there's mirrors on the walls of gyms. They are so not there for the women. You know, it is amazing to me how many guys, I'm just amazed, and they go, you're really liking your body, aren't you? Whoa. Okay. Guys just like their bodies. That's fine. How big the biceps are, it doesn't matter. With girls, we really need to tell them they're beautiful. Especially men need to tell girls they're beautiful. Because women can tell a girl she's beautiful all day long. She will not believe it until her daddy tells her. It is absolutely true. And as a wife, I can tell you, I want to hear my husband tell me I'm beautiful. Hey, you look good. Doesn't cut it. He goes, oh, you look pretty. That's sweet, but it doesn't cut it. I want to know I'm beautiful. And there's lots of different kinds of beauty. There is such powerful in the B word. And that beautiful word. And a big part of that is we are made in the image of God. And Scripture says God is beautiful. It talks about the glory of his beauty in the book of Psalms. It doesn't say he's pretty. Doesn't say he's cute. Doesn't say he's cute mama. You know, it says he's beautiful and we want to be beautiful. We also need to affirm children in their performance. All kids need to hear, I'm so proud of you. Children long to hear that from their parents. Doesn't, you know, if we say this about everything, obviously it loses its power. But kids need to know, I have my parents' approval. I know so many men who are driven to hear these words, son, I am so proud of you, from their fathers. And it's really sad. I know a number of them, their fathers have died, and they are still striving to hear those words of affirmation and pride from their dads. We need to communicate that to our kids. It's important to cast a vision for our kids, saying, you know, you're going to make a fine man of God when you grow up. You're going to make a fine, wonderful woman of God when you are older. To cast a vision for them that way. And as you can see the book there by Dr. Nicolosi, A Parent's Guide to Preventing Homosexuality, he's got this nailed, this whole topic nailed. When you see patterns of inappropriate gender behavior, lovingly correct it. Emphasis here is on patterns, not the idea of a three-year-old putting on mommy's high heels and tromping around the house. Because kids are imitative, that's how they learn. But I mean, 6 months goes by and a little boy refuses to wear boy clothes, he only wants to wear dresses. Or he wants to wear mommy's makeup. Interestingly, when boys are struggling with their gender, it's not that they want to be a girl, they want to be a lady. Something has gone wrong there. And so when kids refuse their own gender, gender-appropriate behavior and dress and play and playmates, and only go with the opposite, with the other gender, it's a red flag saying, I need help, something is wrong. And actually, with young children, if a child shows gender dysfunction and is gravitating toward inappropriate behavior and dress and play, if the parents will go get counseling, that often just totally clears up any confusion with the children. We had, it also may be a red flag that something has gone terribly wrong, particularly in a little girl. For example, a number of years ago in our church, we had a little girl who was 4, I believe. She absolutely refused to let anybody call her by her name. She insisted that everybody call her Jason. She refused to wear girls' clothes. She insisted that her mom buy her boys' underwear even, and she would only wear boys' clothes. You couldn't let her get near a scissors because she would just start clipping off her hair. And believe it or not, they caught her trying to cut off her eyelashes with the scissors, which just scares the bejeebers out of me, the idea of a child with scissors near their eye, because she had these beautiful, long, luxurious eyelashes. And she hated that she was a girl. She was offended if somebody says, okay, girls, it's time to go. I'm not a girl. I'm going to be with the boys. Little girls don't reject their femininity unless something terrible had happened. And so I remember someone saying, do you think she was sexually abused? And I said, if I were a betting woman, I would lay money on it. Because for a little girl to say, I don't want to be a girl, don't call me a girl, what she's saying, she's gotten the message, it is not safe or good to be a girl. And generally that means she was abused in one way or another. We need to communicate to boys that you can be a good, strong male without playing sports. Not everybody is equipped to be a sports person. My husband tends to come from the more tender-hearted, compassionate, sensitive end of the spectrum. His sport in high school was running. He was a cross-country guy. He really wasn't interested in balls coming at him, you know, and it's totally fine to not be into balls coming at you. We can communicate that that's a perfectly legitimate expression of masculinity. We can communicate to girls that you can be a soft, feminine lady and be an athlete or a strong leader. You don't have to be hard. You can be an athlete and be, you know, be beautiful and learn to be soft, and you know, you don't have to be like a guy. And as I mentioned, sensitive, creative types end up, if they're gender affirmed, being the best husbands and pastors and counselors and music ministers, artists. You know, it's really interesting how many shows there are on TV, you know, the makeovers. You know, the guys who are involved in the makeovers are usually gay men. And they're incredibly gifted. They're great. You know, they're so creative. And, you know, I look at that and go, there is no reason why that man can't be, you know, a wonderful, content, masculine guy and be creative and gifted that way. There's no reason he can't do both. But somebody told him a lie at one point. Oh, you must be gay. In our culture, in so many, it starts in school, it's true of so many of the adults as well. On the gender spectrum, you look at the creative, artistic guys, and they think creative, artistic equals gay. That's the mentality. It must be. But it doesn't have to be. David, King David, belonged down on this end of the spectrum. He was creative. He was sensitive. He was a great musician. He wasn't, you know, he had the whole package as well. Just being creative and a musician and artistic doesn't mean you're gay. As we know, with Bathsheba, he was not. We need to support the social distinctions of masculinity and femininity. We need to say things like, to a boy, you look just like daddy, you know, and to a girl, you're acting just like mommy, and that's such a good thing. That's why, you know, a man needs to be around to teach boys how to be toilet trained. You know, boys stand up. And, you know, the social distinctions. Boys wear men's clothes. Girls wear girls' clothes. Unfortunately, it's a lot easier for us because we can wear both pants and skirts. Men really shouldn't wear skirts unless you're Scotch, you know, and then your kilt, you know, means something. But we need to support the social distinctions of masculinity and femininity, especially with children, because we teach them how the world works. It's not intuitive. We have to teach them girls do certain things, boys do other things. We need to specify what men and women and boys and girls do that is different. It has to be spelled out, such as when girls go shopping for bathing suits, they cover their chests. Boys don't, but girls do. But boys and girls look exactly the same in childhood. Yes, they do. But girls cover their chests because we are modest. And girls will always cover their chests. It's part of being modest. Even if you have nothing different to cover up, girls cover their chests. That's what we do. Why? That's the way we do it. This is the world we live in. Oh, I guess I'm done. I can't believe it. I cut out several slides so that I make sure to end on time. Can I open it up for questions?
Well, I guess my question is, in the society we have today where there's a single parent, family is actually almost more the norm than the traditional family.
Mm-hmm.
What can those parents do to have these models that are so needed?
That is a great question. What do we do for the tape? What do we do with single parent families? That's one of the reasons God calls us into community, and why it's so important to be in the church, for men to be an active presence in the families where there is no dad, and for women to be an active presence in families where there is no mom, because it doesn't have to be a child's biological dad to have this voice of the masculine. So a grandfather can fill the role, an uncle can fill the role, a neighbor can fill the role, a mentor of boys can fill the role. So it's real important that we own the truth. It does take a village to raise children, and particularly a church village, you know, where we are speaking into each other's lives. So that's part of it, is people need to look outside of themselves and where is there a need? That's why it's huge for men to be able to connect with boys in Sunday school or Wednesday night activities or someplace where boys can get that masculine attention and masculine voice in a safe place. I think it's also real important to make sure that we engender healthy views of the other sex, so that we encourage single moms, for example, many of whom have been wounded by men who impregnated and abandoned them, to point out that dissing their baby's daddy, or all men in general, which happens a lot, it's very common, thanks to, you know, the feminist thought, where men are dirt, and everybody laughs at that, and all you have to do is watch TV, try to find a single responsible model of a dad or a man, you know, in a family situation. There aren't any. You know, the dad is the butt of the jokes because everybody disses the husband and the father. We need to encourage people to show the respect that's due for both genders. So it all goes back to community, and I'm so glad you asked, because it literally can make the difference between a boy, especially a boy accepting who he is and saying, you know what, I do belong in the world of men. When men speak into his life and say, hey, you know, come fishing with us, or hey, you want to come over and shoot hoops with us, and just inviting them to be a part of, you know, a family where there's a dad around, the value of men's attention in other people's children will never be known till heaven. I really believe that. So thank you for asking. That is a great question. Anything else? I think it's time for lunch. I'm hearing voices. Thank you so much. Thank you.